mention that the report that is presenting is covering all the matters that he would like to present, so that we don't have surprises where he says, no, I'm not aware of this point because it was not prepared by me or whatever. So today we expect that he's conversant with the report and we can account on any sentence that he speaks to on it. And then it is better than that way. And hence, that's why then we said no. Let's shift it to the following week, because today we're supposed to be dealing with state printers bills. But all of a sudden, I'm sure we are aware that there was an indication that there is a change of view about it, that now they want to retain it as a component in the department, but with different modifications or whatever, no more pursuing a state-owned company. Therefore, it actually did away with the possibility of us sitting with the state printers bill in front of us being printed on. Hence, it was easier just to shift the litigation to today. And so today we are receiving that briefing from the department, and then on litigation towards the department. Of course, is that when it comes to actual decision making about cases to oppose or to agree, whatever, I think it is the executive powers of the department itself and then to take those kind of decisions. And then one would just expect that we're not going to find ourselves in a situation where we review a specific case that we even get find ourselves talking to the merits and the demerits of a case. We wanted to know the state of litigation in the department. I think that is what we need to do, and then assess the department, whether it has got the capacity to do that, and the extent and the trends of litigants. I think that is what should empower us to know this department properly. And then after that, I think we will look at minutes for purposes of our adoption. Now, among ourselves, of course, we have got the delegation from the department led by the brand new director, rebranded new director general, Nkosi Aplane. Then we had Ntate Mavuso, the DDG. Then we have got he had a legal services, Deondre Erasmus. Then we have got the boss of litigation, who is here today, which means at the court there's nobody to defend the department. He's on holidays today here. Then we have got Umpo Sotlela is from legal services, and then he's coming to give some sort of support. Muzi here?
No.
I shouldn't be able to miss Muzi if he's here. So he's not here. So we've got a Muzi kind. Okay. And then who is? There is Luvuyo Lupondwa. It's yourself. Okay. Then we have got Stephen Zimri. I can recognize you. Then who's the gentleman next to you with the set of eyes? Lering. Tetsana. What's your title, Baba? Chief Administration Officer. Senior Administration Officer on what? Legal? In the DG's office. Oh, okay. Thank you very much. about capacity building. Then apologies, honourable members. I think the brand new minister, I think is on study leave, if I still remember correctly. She will join us after she has completed exams and the rest. Then Mamunkomo, looks like she's still unable to be with us. Ill health, I'm sure you'll remember that we passed a motion in the National Assembly on ill health. And then Mam Mnisi, not here. And then that Don Gumede, I think he has got split loyalties today. They are also having hearings on political party funding. He's a member of that ad hoc committee. So he will be with us, he may not be with us, and given also the importance of that to be concluded. So then you do have an Honorable Kekana. Honorable Kekana is here, but he's not here. And then it's not fit. It's not fit, and then but is interested in the work of this particular committee. So any time, if the challenges he's having, then give him problems, then we may not see him. When we see him disappearing, it's that everything is overwhelming. It's not fit today, but we hope that there will be some sort of a divine intervention in his health, and get over that. But if you need external assistance, please quickly get it, so that nothing worsens. And some of us that are here will still discharge the responsibility on your behalf when you are dealing with your health situation. Honourable members, without actually speaking a lot, and then let's welcome the interested parties that are here as well, and because our committee always attracts a lot of interested parties, you are welcome. And up to now, you have not caused problems to us, and then that's why we won't have a problem with you. We'll only start worrying when you cause a problem to us. But you are still behaving very well, and we are very happy with your presence, no challenges. And then our staff as well that is assisting us, and then welcome. Then, honorable members, can I just confirm that we have got copies of the slides that we are going to speak to? If you have, and then that means the area has done his work, then we should quickly... No, he's done his work as he normally do. Yes. Then DG, I think you just need to ready yourself to take us on. And if you are ready, then you can proceed.
Why don't we introduce ourselves?
It's only the DG that has been rebranded. The rest of you are actually the furniture of this committee room. Thank you very much. Proceed, DJ.
God bless. Did you introduce ourselves?
No.
No.
You are not invited.
No, there is no need of introducing the very famous honorable member.
But he's a big one.
That's why we had to reproduce him. But the rest, there is no need. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chair, and as well as the members of the committee, and really also the support that I don't say for one, but I really want to thank you for that. Chair, we are here today to deal with one of the difficult issues of litigation in the department. But Chair, we thought that the process of the issue being in the process is one of the what nature of litigation we are talking about. And once we understand that, we want to begin to then get to the actual issues. And how do we manage the litigation processes with the department? And also, there is a main key role player, which is a state attorney, which would be good for us first to say what is the role of the state attorney. Then we deal with the issues now of the litigation trend. And then the other concept is competent liability. Well, what do we mean by that? And then we try to pick up some cases to demonstrate what the department gets involved with based on its mandate. And then we deal with the issue of the legal fees, what are we paying on that? And then we want to do the structure of the legal services to say, what capacity do we have to deal with what the department is faced with? And then as well as the structure of labor relations, and then the challenges, and what are the measures which we are taking to deal with those, and as well as the need for that. Chairperson, we are here today to briefly the Committee on the Management of Litigation Processes in the Department. The mandate of the department is twofold. Is the first one, as we always said, this about 3 weeks, but we're saying first the DSA is a custodian, protector and verifier of the identity and status of citizens and other persons resident in South Africa. This makes it possible for people to realize their rights and access to benefits and opportunities in both public and private sector. By expanding these services to marginalized communities, the department plays as a key enabler in deepening democracy and social justice. That is around racism. Then second, DSA controls, regulates, and facilitates immigration and the movement of persons through ports of entry. It also provides civics and immigration services at foreign missions and determines the status of asylum seekers and refugees in accordance with the international obligations. The department thus makes a significant contribution to ensuring national security and economic development and promoting good international relations. Then now, based on that mandate, what are the services now which we are providing which will give rise now to this issue of litigation? So in summary, we are saying, in civic services and maintenance of the National Population Register, managing the birth, marriage, and death records. So you'll see when I pick some of the cases now, what they link into these issues. Determining and granting citizenship, issuing travel documents and passports, issuing identity documents and policy directives. Even at a policy level, we get challenged as the department. Immigration services is administering admissions, entry and exit into the country, determining the residence status of foreigners and issuing visas, permits, custodian of refugee affairs, inspectorate. Well, the inspectorate is the one which now goes and arrests people who are in our country illegally, but it also gives rise to the issues of litigation and also the policy directives. We also provide support services. So with the support services, also from that front, you also get litigation issues. So we're saying in terms of human resource management and development, that's why we're talking about labor issues, finance and supply chain management, we're talking about contracts and tenders, IT services, institutional planning and support, not much, capital corruption and security does, and as well on communication, but there's not much for this. Chair, having said that, what is the nature of litigation which we get as a department? Litigation against the department is primarily by way of motion and action proceedings. Motion proceedings involve instances where the applicants approach the court seeking a specific release, such as release from detention, compelling the department to make a decision whether it's to issue a permit or an outstanding application, or when decisions have been made action process is to contain plaintiff's seeking damages following arrest, which are alleged to be unlawful, motor vehicle accidents and so on, but modern vehicles, disputes around tenders and contracts between the department and suppliers. Also, I want to come back to the issue of political liabilities, what political liabilities are linked now with the issue of action process. Then we decided to split the issue of labor issues, which entails employees who were disciplined by the department and received a negative outcome from a disciplinary proceeding by either being dismissed or any other adverse outcome, and then launched the application at the labor court seeking to set aside the negative award against them. But there is a principle which is very important in terms of how we manage this, because at times we see and say why this matter is sitting in our vault for many, many years. There's a principle of dominus litis, which says now master of the suit. So what it means is that the person who has a real interest in the decision of the case is the plaintiff that lodged the department. So it means that if somebody has lodged a case against the department, I cannot have a way to just go and remove that case until it has gone throughout all the processes until that person is either the decision has been taken, that thing can sit in your books for years without any movement. But I can't go to court and say, take this thing out. It's only the other party who can do that. So when you look at the age analysis, you might find that there's things which are sitting there all the time. Such claims remain in the department's contingency liability report until either the matter proceeds to trial and finalized, or the plaintiff withdraws the case. So how do you manage the stipulation process? Client functions are the main sources of litigation at the department, although in instances arises where litigation and management is concerned. So it is still the end of the litigation trial. We have demonstrated that in the next slide. But the Directorate of Litigation, which is not going to come to the structure within the department, is responsible for civil litigation by or against the department, as well as legal inquiries and legal opinions pertaining to possible civil litigation by and against the department. Then we have that contingent liability. So can I explain it better than I've said, but a contingent liability is a potential liability that may occur. It doesn't mean once I put something on a contingent liability, it means you must pay for it. It's going to depend whether the other party successfully made the claim and the court, because once something sits on the contingent liability, we are always careful about it to say we can't just settle it. So we need to be very thorough of the process. Yes, we might take it up to the critical conclusion of the court, but if there are reasonable grounds to settle that matter, we will do so. But we always make sure that we do that based on an advice by the legal counsel. Because if you don't do that, you might sit with a problem now to say on what basis did you settle. Department currently has a contingent liability of about 2 billion rand made up of six things, but I will come into detail. It is important, this point, that the departmental legal officials, although suitably qualified in the department, are excluded from appearing in court of cases. So when you deal with the issue of legal fees, you have to come back to this that our own staff members cannot go to the department, so we cannot retain lawyers outside who are on certain cases. It's very important for us to deal with the role and the mandate of the state attorneys in the state litigation. We said mandate of both state and the function of state attorneys provided for in Section 2(1) of the state. Namely, to perform in any court or in any part of the court in such a way. play a role in terms of the comment, the comment inspiration for particular what the comment is that one of the parties said in this case would be considered by lawyers. I do not have an answer to it for his hand. Lawyers expert. That's why then I want to do that legal fee. Someone wanted just to pay full to the attorney, don't pay attorney back. But unless under exceptional circumstances that we have applied, then we are auditing that gets auditing. Therefore, the primary objective of this interview is to render a more cost effective, efficient, and professional service on behalf of the state. The state attorney's going to ensure efficiency by reducing costs and keeping friends and family at the point of unit development in the legal field. I will still come back on the issue of the reducing of the cost. The mandate of the state attorney also includes providing advice to the State Department of Contracts, personal related issues, and provision of legal opinion. So if you go to a case, so go to the state attorney, maybe we have to decide whether I want to appeal this case or not, they will provide us with a legal opinion based on that very necessary. Furthermore, is the collection of legal fees on behalf of the state in instances where the state has been awarded costs, but I will come back and deal with that circumstances in the case. Then the left side, in terms of the state attorney recommended, only state attorneys that are right of appearance on behalf of the state in court proceedings. So what are the legal terms in the department? You just took 5 years and we split it based on those matters and I said, what is our mandate? So we said it's an immigration issue. We look at all the asylum seeker management issues, civil servicing to someone, labor, other small issues of asylum like propriety or sustainment of them. But if you look at the terms, is that in the 2012-13, where 2,164 cases were received in that year, and then in the following year, 2012-16, then there was a problem of 14, 15, 8, 9, 4, and then again a rise in the 2015, 16, 17. But if you look at it, your numbers are only asylum seeker management. Which meant it was 1,700 in the previous year, and then now it's 1,900. Because I think what the number of people who are complaining about the issues around that. And as well as your immigration services are an issue. Yes, civics are there, but not as much as the others, and as well as summons and labor. Because if you look at labor, as a department, we've got 9,000, we're close to 10,000 staff members, but the case was sitting in that range of about 96 to 69. But I would explain with example in terms of the examples about contingent liabilities is what now wanted to say. This is the money part of this. So if you look at this one, in 2009-10, if you look at the last column, you also split them in terms of those immigration and civic services matters, labor disputes, finance and supply, that is the tenders, and the small other things. If you look at 2009-10, we were sitting at about 6.862 billion of contingent liabilities. But if you come now to 2016-17, we're sitting at 2 billion. Does that mean we paid 4 billion rand out? No. So what happens is that these matters, as I've said, that they just sit there. But when you recall, there were the big contracts in the 2009-10 wire, which was sitting at about 4.5 billion rand. And we were able to deal with that matter. We settled, we never paid anything, we're still proceeding. But Chair, I want us to go through detail, but on the 2016 perception. Let's start with that one million. If you see a 2016-17 under Immigration and Civil Services was sitting at that billion. With the chair, I will, if the committee wants that report, but I don't want to disagree with you. So they've also got names of the people and all that, but we can provide the list to the committee. So this is what. But what I wanted to highlight here is that if you take immigration services, in that 109.7 billion, immigration services are for 656 million, that's what we have. But in my list, Chair, because in this process of litigation, there is no scale like in the traffic fines. If you drive at a speed of 120, you know that your fine is so much amount. If you are at 150, it is 100 beyond, you get arrested. Here, it is the litigants who decides what word item I am. For instance, here I've got the case of a person who said, look, I think I worth 38 million rands. And then when you read what is the issue, maybe the person was arrested for one day, but it just like came to say that he's 38 million rands. You can't say, no, no, no. How can a one day be equal to 38 million? Because what I'm saying, I put it on the paper, it's what I do and worth. Then the court process, but what is the danger in our politics? If the department I can simply says no, how can a one day be equal to 38 million and don't oppose it? That matter will be held in court and of court, and the decision will be made against the department. So that is what cause now arise to the legal field, because now you're going to defend that. Whether you think that it's something which is applicable out of 10. Then the other one, Chair, out of that amount, which is a big amount, a person claimed 420 million. So it means that in that 656 of immigration alone, 420 of that amount is one person. And then if I can just read what this person is saying, the plaintiff alleges that he was arrested by the police, not by the man, by police and charged with numerous charges of fraud, forgery, uttering theft and contravention of company and post-corporation laws. Then let's come on, why is he leaving that one? He claims that the payment in terms of Section 41 of the LSCA was simply received by the officials of the department, which permit allowed the plaintiff to remain in the country pending the conclusion of his trial. He also alleges that the permit precluded him to either take up employment or conduct a business in the country. Now, the question is, if now you are arrested as a foreign national for contravention of the law by police, how can I grant you now a permit which allows you to work? But the permit I give you is to say, be in the country, deal with your case. Once can I finish with it, then it will tell you whether you remain and all that. But yet, based on that, this person sits and says, I'm worth 420 million. So it was just for demonstrating purposes. If I come to civics now, civics is 434 million. Even there, I'll just highlight just one case there. Because there are two. So in that 434, 20 million, the person what is claiming to the department is the plaintiff alleges that the department fled him as deceased while he was alive, which is a fact and we of something that he said must happen. But the question now is to say, when we have done that, what prejudice has that person get up to that way of creating the world? Is it a situation where one says, I was declared dead, and then now my insurance policy was claimed by somebody wrong probably because of the action of the extremist. But you can be declared dead and then we rectify that within 2 days and 3 days. What is this loss to the game of truth? So that's why you have to keep defending the court and say, yes, this action has happened, but can it work to continue? Then the other one, 400. So 400 is like a number. So like in this case, the plaintiff is a medical doctor and alleges that he went to Canada for a year and upon his return, his passport particular such a tight number were changed without his knowledge or consent on the department system in 2006. And as a consequence, he was arrested for a day. And then after that, then he says now he suffered damage at the economic level. Then you see that one day equal to 400 million, what this person is worth. And this is the last that has the value. That's why you have to support. So as an example, that's what was saying is about 434. If you come now and share to the ones of the contracts, that 920. 920, I picked just about four items. What that one is about contracts and tenders. The first one, since things are old. The other one was we have the electronic document management system. That tender was the feature was never awarded. So in that, we got a claim of 602 million. So in 920, you already have your left with about 200. And then there's another one of about 171 million. It was the issue of a bandwidth on our mobile offices, which we believe that we didn't get from this company, we got it from the other. Okay, that was the 2008 case. This one now is 2009 case, the one of the bandwidth, which is 171. And the last case also relates on the software licenses which were provided with the wire. And then the supplier first came to us and said, oh, you owe us licenses for 204 million rands, and how is that possible? Then at the end, through the interaction, that amount was reduced to 88 million. We are still engaged in that process. Why would you pay licenses from 2000? Because why are you in the 2008 process? So why in all these years there was no claim? Then now in 2016, we just come up and claim like that. So if you look at that amount, almost 900 million is the old case, and we are really defending. So what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that with that contingent liability, it's really few high cases. But the chair, if the committee wants to look, copy of the report, we can give it the tape so we can see each name and all that. What is the name card? Then, Chair, we said, you know, let's just choose certain cases to explain what the department deals with it and how we deal with them. So, the first one, Chair, which we picked it up, but are all affected under the immigration or still being sustained just by way of all of this case. said I will not get to discuss the case of what happened, but I think it's just to say the implication of what is to say if now you just leave that thing like that, you do it now tomorrow, I can come and say, you've opened my port of entry next to the bridge, because I don't want to go to the other, that port of entry. So it's something which we need to be taken. More special than in our view is that the Immigration Act says you can open a port of entry as long as it is for commercialization by all. I don't have a port of entry, which is for this one or for that one. So something like that is what they will actually need. The other one, is that there was a case of a person who crossed from Botswana. This person killed someone in Botswana and then crossed illegally into the country, not to a port of entry, because there was no record that that person crossed there. Then that case, because there was a case which was prior to that one, where the Constitutional Court says you can't return someone to a country where a capital punishment can be imposed into that person. They call it a non-refoulement principle. Now the question which we had in that case was to say, what do we do with this person? So must we let the person roaming around the streets? But this person has committed a crime in the country of origin. But the fact was like that. But what happened in Abidjan's case? The employees, whatever, I don't know, they might say they did not know about the case and what had happened. Send that person back to Botswana. And Chen will take him to court. I had to report. I had to prepare a report to the court every 30 days to explain where is the person. But lucky for us, the person crossed back to South Africa and committed another crime. So it says, no, I know there's nothing you can do with you. I'm here. So then, you know, that case, what does it does now? It leads now to the Labor Relations matter. Because now the people involved in this were dismissed in the department. When they get dismissed, then now they take us to court. And then now every month that that case has not yet been decided, we must add contingent liability. And if that person wins the case, I need to be able to pay for that person. But yet that amount is not paid for the budget, it must come from National Treasury. That's why in our financial statements, we have to report on the contingent liability. And as we speak now about another person who has crossed the border, as we speak now, besides that, is here in our country, because if they know that I crossed the country in South Africa, there is no capital punishment, South Africa won't be able to take us there. But we have yet now to take these matters into court, because now they carry to the legal hands. The other one, was the case of, as an example, a closure of a refugee center here in Cape Town. That matter was taken to High Court here, and the department won the case. The High Court agreed with us and said, yes, it is correct. We followed the process. It's fine if that national operator is not here. But now the other party took the matter to SCA. But the Constitutional Court did not agree with the High Court. It says, no, High Court, we made a mistake. So the matter now is taken out of the Constitutional Court. So what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that the issues of litigation is not as straightforward thing. You can't say it will end up here in South Africa. Our highest court of the land, the Constitutional Court, one has, well, I come back to this committee. As we say, why we have to defend this? Also, they restricted the organizers from that to say, once a court takes a decision, it overrules even your legislation. So the court decision is higher than your legislation. That's why you have the right to amend that. So if ENA as a department, which now we are dealing with every vote and every circumstance, when we say Home Affairs deals with a child from birth to cradle and following this one, that's why now we have a high litigation as a department. What happened now in this case? In this case, which now we are challenging other quarters, as a department, we thought in the legislation that if somebody is arrested for criminal offenses, it is different. That was the view of which we brought to Parliament. That if now you are arrested for immigration purposes, because we're not arrested to be taken to a court process, we are arresting you for the purposes of deporting. So when we are arresting, we take you to the area where we need to interact with the country of origin to make sure that you've got a passport and what. So we thought that the 120 days does cover that process. But this matter was taken to constitutional courts. And the chair and I said, listen, they don't start it. When I say constitutional, I first spend money at the high court. And then I went to another court and then it ended up in the constitutional court. The constitutional court says not arresting a person is the same. You can't differentiate on the nature of the transgression. Whether it is a criminal or it is a, I must be brought to court and I think this is illegal. So now, Chair, we are on our way now back to Parliament. That's what I was talking about. It means now that Immigration Act must be amended. Because of the judgment. So that's why I have to defend, but they have to come back now on this one and say, Constitutional Court has taken a decision, it must come back to a Parliament and amend that. But the consequences of that is now this punishment of the illegal immigrants. That's why I'm saying there is an issue now which we still have around Johannesburg Metro. To say, if now those understandings are not there, so it means I can't just go into a place and just collect people and put them in the back and they're like, deport them. You have to follow this procedure. I must only be taken within 48 hours. Remember that our Lindela is in the Kruger School. A person is arrested in the KZN or Eastern Cape. Now, within that 48 hours, I must be able to take that person into court, and that person must be able to say, yes, I don't have this document or whatever, therefore, you can proceed. But after that, you've got only 120 days to proceed. That's where a lot of challenges come from when you get charged. This one is an example, again, where staff members claim and then that thing was going to cost us 14 million rand. So after we defended it, then the labor court agreed with us to say no, we cannot pay this period, this amount. Issues that to defend the 14 million, we must go to the court. Because if we don't spend that, it means we must be part and just simply settle those things. Chair, this one is a difficult one. Again, but what to say. Here is a couple whom they are married first as a man and a female. Now, the Marriage Act also allow for the same-sex marriage. But that is not under the Marriage Act. It's under the Single Union Act. Okay, that's the conversation. Now, in this instance, a main couple, a spouse, decides now to change to be a female. Now, the Marriage Act now is saying, no, this thing is not allowed. You must go and do it in terms of the thing. Then the couple says, no, we're still here with our marriage, there is no breakdown. We can't go for a divorce, because a divorce is when you must demonstrate that there is a breakdown of the relationship, or one partner is insane, and then based on that, then they allow it. So we are here with our marriage, but what we want, change our, keep our status as it is. So then what do you do? It's upset. Have to go. I don't have the power. It's the court who must help us and say interpretation of this means that or that. So okay, at the end of the day, what the court says for so far, it says all of us must follow the pattern.
Let me just understand it. You are saying this couple, they married as man and a woman under the Marriages Act. Then the man changes and become a woman.
Yes.
And then once the Marriages Act to recognize them exactly the same as a civil union.
Yes. So they must
it's a violation. They should migrate to the civil union.
Yes.
They're refusing to migrate.
So they are saying we're still happily serving.
Yeah.
So why are you dissolving our marriage on the basis that we are not living? So the question now, which now this is when I look at, is to say, is the Marriage Act contravening any constitutional right of those individuals? Because the individuals are saying that you were splitted into the Civil Union Act or whatever to them is to say that there were married couples who were there before all these things. But what it leads to is the only chance is to demonstrate the issue that that there's something happening. You can't just keep quiet. I can't just simply say, oh, that's what these couples want, they will just do it. I must be able to say that they are wrong, but we can interpret it in the court. Okay? So, another one, Chair.
This one is a class 2 question.
Oh, this one is a class 1, not a
class 2.
Yes. Again, so you see that why people are challenging this is based on constitutionality. The current death Act says people can register a child if it's a married couple, whether it's the mother or the father, can register that child because they are married. But if they are not married, it is the mother who must register a child. Maybe it's taken from the process that at least it's the mothers who bring the child as well. Now, in this instance, now, this person goes and gets to the health clinic card, and where there's the name of the mother, he writes his name and says, I am the wife. Now, Home Affairs register this child. Then Home Affairs, where is the mother? Because we are not married. Court says, no, but this is unconstitutional. Why mothers are given more rights more than the men? If now we can open that, then it's problematic. Then we're closing our way to protect the children. So now as Home Affairs, we have now to take that letter And yet, based on investigations, we find out that really that man did tempered with the document. But we still stand as a department that father is registered there, child is in school, but law allows that the father can insert his name in the now that's why they say we need to go to those issues of paternity. Well, this one is not a case. One of the examples was that this man said, I had this girlfriend before I got married and then we had a child. Now the woman married another man. When they are married with that other man, though the child is still young, they go and register that child as the mother and the father. So the child now takes the surname of the stepfather. But in the record, it's not saying that. It says it's the mother and the father. Now the mother dies. Now the father, who is the stepfather, wants now to take this child and register in his name. Now the question is, Home Affairs can't look at that and say you are a real father or not. The only way is to say, go and do a DNA test. If now the DNA test proves that you are the father, then the Home Affairs has got a basis. But what people do, they just go and challenge that. So what we're trying to demonstrate with these cases is that it's something which are not as easy as it's a complicated business. You really have to go through those processes. So the best thing about this case, then the other one, this one checked also. This one now is in reverse of that. Remember the other one is the one at the High Court. And then we pretend at the SCD. In this one, the system reversed. What happens here is that when you say you are an asylum seeker, what do you are saying? Inverted commas. I am no longer wanting the protection of my country. I am no longer able to get that protection. So it means now I seek a protection into the other country. Therefore, you no longer need that passport or have the rights of the citizens of that country because we have abandoned that. Now you come to South Africa, you are an asylum seeker. Now once you are here now, you want to change now and say, no. I'm no longer an asylum seeker. That's why I was saying people of the countries of the world come to South Africa or to any country in the world as an asylum seeker. It's either you come to a refugee or to immigration. If you come to immigration, it means you're still connected with your country, whether you work, you start. Now these asylum seekers must first know, I am here now, I want to change. And now get whatever permit. Now the question is, you're going to be getting that permit based on what? Because we are no longer under the flag of that country. So they took us to court, and then when we were in the High Court agreed with the asylum seekers to say, well, we're infringing their rights. That yes, they were here, now the circumstances has changed, why not? But we took that matter to SCA. And then SCA agreed with us and says, no, if you are an asylum seeker, take that notice until you change. But then nothing says you are a refugee permanently. You are a refugee, that's why we give you for 4 years. Once they're now, that status has been changed to you. It's your country's status to change. So go back to your country now and say, things have normalized, I'm coming back, you are back to your country. Once you are there, now come So, because the SCA approved the class, but the other party, they say, no, no, we're not stopping them. And I was going to constitutional court. So what am I doing now to that? So us who have the case. This one, Getche, is the one which I've already talked about. Actually, these things were old. It's a contract which was in Kenya that was granted by the government at one point. It was at 1.3 million rands, but then it was reduced to 602 million, but we're still defending. Because if we don't defend it, it means now we are saying, let's pay the 602 million. It's the same with this one. This one, it was a provision of bandwidth in our mobile trucks. And then this company was hoping that they are getting this bandwidth from abroad, and they were charging the department at a price which includes exchange rate. And then now asked, says, no, but you're getting this thing to a local company yet, why should we pay for that advantage? So we're still defending this matter. So let's take now the figure of what we're paying per annum based on all one articles. Chair, we are paying at this range of over 30 million rands per annum. So, but I compared this amount into the total value of 2 billion of the contingent liability, and then that gives me about 2.2%. Then if I take it against the budget of 7 billion, home affairs is about 0.7%. So what I'm saying is that when you look at it at first value like that, you see you want to spend 37 million rand on the government. But with the challenges which we face as a government, what if I change, I don't spend this amount, and then I must have 2 billion rand, which I must pay to those kids. Two, I must agree on anything which a party comes and say, I want to do this, and then you just let them to do this. Then it won't be possible. Then, the other difficulty we have, this committee knows that we were here about the treasurer, and they have not yet come back to us, Chair, on the cutting of proceeding on the personnel budget. So, this structure, I'm trying to say, what number of people do I have to administer all what we've been talking about? So, if you got a chief director and one support is fine, you still need to go, okay. So, what was in our grants for legal services, we had a chief director. Then, contracts. So, there's only one person in the director who's looking after contracts of the department. So it means now in the budget of 7 billion rands, surely the tenders are also going to be at that level. So to manage these things, to make sure, that's why you sit and say, why would I, that company comes to us after 6 years and say, it's been paid the licenses. But if now you are failing at the contract management, those challenges will come, you see them on the gates. So it's something which was said we're really creating. Here I am.
Who are legally qualified? Where you say that if you go back to your slide, there you have got three positions. Which positions are legally qualified?
Only one. It's the chief director.
The rest are just
remember. The other one is a secretary. The other one is just an admin support. So
then doesn't need to be legally qualified, but you just need to be appropriately qualified for administration.
Yes, but you do administration.
So now you only have one legal person actually there.
Yes, who's the chief director.
I'm sure members are here.
Then when we come now on this one, let me just say again, I've got one, because now, so I've got a director who must look at all to carry on, because contracting is not at the end. If you miss it at those processes of all the specifications that we've gone down, and how this tender looks at, and when you come at the tail end, that's very late. So we've got only one person then. Chair, we just have a tender which was listed, which is about 400 million rand. So for a tender like that, there was no way that I can say this person must do it. So what do I do? I will appoint people from outside, and then it affects my incumbents, because it's only one person. Chair, probably here is where we can say more or less, fine, we are not happy, but this one is with them drafted. But even on this one, our laws are going to be found wanting, like that section 34. We need that capacity to do that. And so that they will bring legislation here that's been thoroughly looked at. But because of lack of capacity, if we end up more really drafting the document, then it's fine, because the parliament and the implementation state can start facing challenges. So less in numbers is better than one. The worst one, Chair, is the man. The litigation, even on this one, what was said here is that I've got 7 people. You remember, it's a director, and I now I can't count the secretary. Yes, I've got those 3 senior legal admin officers and 4 legal admin officers. So we can say I've got 7. If you take that number, which I gave, let's say we've got about 2,800 per annum. So it means now each person is dealing with 541 cases per annum. And with all those complications and complex matters and all of that, which is just actually impossible. But this is what I have to say, Chair. Labor relations, I've already said, Chair, I've got 9,000, close to 10,000 staff members. And people which I have are 6, which is 2 ASP. And 4 immigration officers who must deal with all that, because 7 cases must be finalized within 60 days. Even in this area, we end up now going and outsource some of so that we can meet those levels of deliveries. So yeah, we were just mentioning here, yeah, just what are the challenges for bringing this? Legally, there's something called taxation status. What this thing means is that no lawyer.
Just before you get there, Chair, all these directorates that you're speaking to, are they reporting to one person who is in charge of actually making sure that all the areas then does get infected? Who is that?
It's only that chief director, Dion. That's what I was saying now. Even
all of them are reporting to Dion. From litigation, labor, and all of that.
Except for labor, and I saw this one.
And human resources.
Yes.
Okay.
Then, Chair, the things called taxation on this legal committee. As I was saying, we're more outsourcing this. So a lawyer charged you for speaking over the phone, for traveling, for faxing a document, and all of that. So what happens here is that a challenge is that if the state attorney gets this thing, because of their capacity, nobody looks at that. They just pass the thing to us. Then you find that a person might charge you and say, yes, maybe the president is in a court in Abtaji, but this person is in the suburb around there. I know that from there to the court, the maximum is 50 kilometers. But when you get a bill, whether you use 8 kilometers, it says now, no, I charge you 500 naira. So there are taxi operators. It means now we need someone who must sit there and say, if the distance is like this, this is what we can do. If now the hours which you said we took in preparing that case are like this, the hours we took in court are like this, so that now you don't go and appear in court for 2 hours. Just because that case was scheduled for 2 days, we charge us instead of 2 hours of appeal. If then I will let that, then I will challenge you. So that is the biggest challenge we have. Then the other one, Chair, already talked about the issue of the legal fees, to say it's something which is a problem to us. But it's the nature of the work in the department. However, there are things on our side which we still need to tighten with them. Like, Chair, you know now that we are hoping that the portfolio committee has already received. That's why when we're at NCOP with the 50 amendment bill, we finalized on that side, but we're informed that the NCOP now is preferred to be back to to finalize it. So we're really looking forward to that. But what that can affect us with is that with the SCRA and RAP, we'll be able now to appoint people, not necessarily on the 5 year term. It can be based on, it can be 2 years or whatever, based on the backlog which we have. And Chair will be on record with the backlog sitting like that. That's why it's not the first preference. But if now we can be able to have that thing passed, and then can help us not to deal with the backlog. But I'm not sure whether it's come, but that's what, as we're following this thing now. Well,
maybe we should indicate that they should be expecting to pass it within the next few days. I think last week, I think they were not successful. That's the brief that I got. But either maybe they lack numbers in the house or something, I'm not sure. But in the earliest opportunity, then probably they'll do so. Yes, it's still on the roll of the house.
No,
but in the first short space of time, they will deal with it. Thank you.
Then, Chair, what was the we are really looking at in the opportunity that afford some space. We want, within the legal services, to get some people can deal with the mobilization of these. And say, let us get one expert, maybe out of that, minimum pay, minimum save some money to call up people involved, even one of the department in the process of implementation of this. And then we are also dealing with the matter of the MTA, at least one person that CVs have been mentioned just at a chief, at a DPT level. But we're still worried that if we can be able, at least in that province, that's what it does, you say, in that one province, or one legal person in that province, so that these things will be done with them as freely as possible, and people can understand what we do. And then, Chair, the last one for us is that for way forward, we still want to engage with the state again, because yes, we don't want to take the power to appoint. We still want to use the state again, so that all the issues of tenders and all that. But we want to talk to them that the payment part, if we can deal with it, it can help us. Because we find that some of these bids are open still this year, coming in this year, so we wanted to manage the that to one of the cases that is there. And I've said we're looking at that until official government. Once we've done that, we want also to bring the issues of accountability and say each branch must have its own budget of the legal fees so that they can manage make sure that there are no issues about the delay of the determined response that we receive. So I'm looking at the money that we know that are there, budget also apply. So Chair, with that, I tried to get a question, but it's something which we hope that we'll always come back as we said that now.
Now, thank you very much, DG. I'm just a little bit wary about the list that you are speaking about, if it is detailed and with names of people, and because one believes that that is your source document that you use to prepare this report for us. And I think for purposes of security, it should remain as such. And But members, I think if they request individually as such from yourself, then you should be able then to provide to them. And then in a manner that whatever that still needs to be kept confidential, because some of the cases are not finished as sub judice and the rest, then at least you know who has access to that information, so that then if it happens to be divulged, at least you are able to trace it back, rather than just flushing it in public. That's what I would request. And then, but members, if they ask for any specific information from the department, you should be able to format the information in a manner that it assists them. But then without actually contravening some of the laws that we have in terms of keeping certain information confidential until certain things have happened. I think if we do that way, I think it may make a little bit more sense. Honorable members, I think what we have picked up is that the origin of litigations, there's very little that the department can do. But what is much more critical is how the department responds. Does it have capacity to do so? And what is key, I think, that has been said is the fact that the department cannot defend itself, it has to do it on an agency basis with the state attorneys. And then now, what more or less comes out clear is that the state attorneys are actually servicing almost all state organs. Then the question is, what is their capacity? Are they not frustrating state or state organs? And then that becomes a problem. But then the department has to have capacity to manage its own litigations and make sure that they expedite it, they follow it up, and then they actually review their regulations against the Constitution, against the legislation that we have, whether they are compliant with the piece of legislation that we have. But currently what the DG has gone through seek to indicate that they are very thin. And the manner in which that they are thin, they are actually the officials that they have employed, whether being legally qualified, but they are transformed to be jacks of all trades. When you only have three senior legal officers in litigation, and the litigation comes in all sorts of kinds, from immigration, from civic services, from that, then all these few people have to deal with all of them. That means they are not specializing, they are jack of all trades. And then I think the following ways is after Jack of all trades is master of none. That is what follows on that particular thing. Hence, then, that means you can expect a lot of flaws in their work because they are not specializing, they are not paying 100% attention to their issues because they are holding here and there and just to keep the work of the department to be moving. And then I think that it's something that really needs to be attended to. And some of the cases that the DG has spoken to, really they are dramatic cases that warrant probably a film to be created sometimes in future. Because I'm sure we can make a lot of money. Honorable members, there we are. And then we have Honorable Hussein. Then there is Raputi. And then there is Mkalipi. Are we right to call you that now? You only arrived today. You may not be knowing. But we'll confirm. And then Honorable Kenya. Yeah, is that changed? No, thank you very much. I think that is the best way of confirming. Yes. No, we just hope that there won't be another application to change very soon. Then it's Honorable Kenyon, then Honorable Ficklin, and then you're still applying your mind, Zambu. In that order, Honorable Hussein.
Thank you very much. May I just say that I myself will be interested in the list. I'd like to have a copy of it.
Yeah.
This is Parliament. We are the MPs and we actually want more information. I think the comment was a bit strange and that what is so secure about the list? This thing is in the public domain already. These are cases that are there in court. So it's an open issue. There's nothing you should be afraid of. So we want more information. Generally, the department doesn't want to give it to us. You are offering them not to give it to us. So I disagree with that. I actually would encourage that we circulate the list. Let us know what the situation is. I also don't agree, Chair, that there is very little the department can do. I think that there is much more that they can do to reduce the propensity of risk that the department faces itself. On a very regular basis. And granted that, I think that we would probably never reach a situation where the department's never involved in a single case. I doubt that will ever happen. The nature of the business that they are engaged in, you're always going to have those challenges by people who think that they have a better argument, and that will always be there. Even the naughty ones, and those who think that they are capable of getting something out of the department. This is an international phenomenon. You know, people deliberately trip in a shopping mall these days to try and claim some money from the owners of the shopping mall. So it's not unusual. It will always be there. But I want to deal with those, and I refer my comments more specifically to those cases that can be avoided as a result of incompetence, if that's the right word. Perhaps it's too harsh, but where officials are involved in either not doing their jobs properly that has an impact. I mean, just a simple error by somebody behind the counter, for example, can impact millions of rands in the department. A case where somebody's by some sort of error was declared deceased, in the case that the DG was talking about, and then there's a claim of 20 odd million rand, and regardless whether we win or lose, it costs us money, as it's indicated, and that's money that could be used. So I'm referring my opening comments to simply those, especially those type of cases, human error, if I can put it that way. And then of course the case of the Section 34 matter you referred to in the Lawyers for Human Rights. Again, Chair, we've got legal advisors, we've got street law advisors, we've got all of this massive legal muscle. And they cannot pick up a thing like that. It just amazes me that we have to now change the law, and yet we went through that process of state law advisors and all of those guys with big black coats wearing advocates, what, and yet they can't pick up a simple thing like this. It amazes me. You know, this is why the government keeps losing cases in court against the DA, I must tell you. Just take the legal advice from us, I think. We'll offer it, not for free, but just for. So the point I'm making, Chair, is that even there, it's very disappointing because, again, what is it going to cost the state now to try and resolve all of this thing? At what cost did it come to initially? You have to go to court, get all of those, lose those cases. Now you have to change the law. I mean, it has to happen, but those are cases that can be avoided. And I was encouraged by, you know, the interventions that the DG presents on how you could reduce it by engaging with lawyers and so on beforehand. But you see, I'm not a lawyer, but I do understand that before you go and issue a summons, you issue at least a letter of demand. You have to give some indication at first that fix this thing or else. So there's no need for that extra intervention to actually go and invite the lawyers to say, hey, please talk to us first before you run to court. Actually, they do talk to you first. They send you a letter to say, I'm giving you 7 days. So I don't think it's a case of, as the DG put it, perhaps maybe he didn't mean it like that. But people don't just simply run off to court without giving the department an indication first to say, this is what we are planning to do, please fix it. I'm aware of a number of cases, Chair, on PRP permits, for example, where people wait for years for those cases to be adjudicated. And eventually, they get so tired because they can't get a response to an email or a telephone call, or nobody in the department can even tell them what the current status of the thing is, and not even some indication of when this thing can be resolved. So if people know when those cases will be sorted, listen, we've got problems, it's going to take us 8 months or whatever, we're short on staff, we expect this thing to be resolved by that date. At least give people a sense of direction. And that also contributes to them running off to court because they got no sense of hope that this thing's ever going to be dealt with. I know this for a fact, Chair, because I deal with a number of people who come and complain to me. In fact, some of them. I even say, rather go to court because you'll get the department then to jump much faster. It's getting that bad to a large degree when it comes to adjudicating documents from Home Affairs. Then, just on that point, Chair, another good example is that situation we had where the sheriff came and took the furniture away. Yeah. A classic case in point. You get served with documents, you don't follow the process of making sure that the state law advisors get it in time, they'll be able to present the case on behalf and defend the department in time, and then there's an order granted. So it's those type of things that I'm referring to, and all of those things add to those 32 million costs one way or another. So I disagree completely that there is very little the department can do. In fact, I think there is quite a lot the department can do. And those statistics, although they're quite interesting, I would be very interested to know how many of the cases over a period of time has the department been losing. Tell us how many cases there is. We understand that, but how many of them have we been actually losing in court? And I know that you still have to go through this High Court and Appeals Court and then eventually to the Constitutional Court, but at some point the department accepts that this case we're not going to even appeal, let's go deal with it. So you'll be able to tell. And I'll be very interested to get that. I don't expect the department to give it to me now. I'm not sure if they do have it. But I think therein will show us and give us a more clearer indication, actually, especially when it comes to immigration matters. Because if you add these cases over the years, you can see there's no doubt about it. It is on the increase. And am I correct, DG, these are not accumulative targets, right? This is per annum. And so when you add it up, Chair, it's 5,600 odd over the last 5 years, 6,000 odd. That's almost just 11,000, 12,000 odd cases just over 5 years. Those are pretty impressive figures, if I can put it to you that way, meaning it sarcastically. It's bad. And there must be ways in which we can reduce it. I've heard some of the solutions, DJ. I haven't been ignoring them, and I understand the difficulties around the asylum seeker process and all of that. And perhaps that is going to contribute to some degree to reducing it. But let's see how that goes over time. Chair, I want to ask where we have a situation where there is human error or incompetence on the part of a staff member, and it ends up costing the state and the department a lot of money. And I know that you follow the normal course of disciplinary action. I'm very encouraged to hear that, because that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you, is what happened to that staff member who deported the Botswana citizen. I put in a written question some time ago, and I think you responded, DG, saying that it's, the matter was pending. But now I'm encouraged to hear that that person is gone. But do we recover costs from staff where there is cases of either collusion or deliberate intent on their part? Then on this, I just want to take you quickly to page 15. I noticed the 2014 to 2016 year, there was a remarkable decrease there from 593 million down to 200, and another 200 the following year. It's just, it'd be interesting to know what happened during that period. Yeah, on page 15.
Mm.
Oh, this one, okay. Mm. Which is 2014, 15, and 15, 16. So those 2 years. It was quite a. Yeah.
You mean from 6.8 billion to
1.5? 593 million, then it goes down to 209 million, then it goes to 228, and then there's a massive jump again to a billion. No, I just wanted to know, what did we do, what happened in those years where we are 200 odd, that such a big drop, something must have happened there. The legal fees, Chair, the one document that we've got here on the one slide, does that include all the legal costs on taking it, or everything? Okay. And then lastly, Chair, I'm not sure how diplomatically I can put this question, but I'll put it as honestly as I can. The reality is that when it costs us money, money that we spend on legal fees is money less that we have to provide services to. That's the bottom line. And so everything that I've said thus far is in direct relation to that, because we understand as public representatives what the difference is out there on the ground when people complain about long queues and all of that. So every rand that is spent somewhere else is a rand less that's spent on service delivery. Now, the DG himself has been in court of recently, and we understand that. And that, too, is going to cost the department money. I want to know how much did that, what is that going to cost the department, ultimately? And how are we going to recover the money from the minister? If you don't want to answer that question, it's fine, the second part of it. But I'd like to know how much is it going to cost the department. My view is that the minister must pay that money back, because it's an error on her part. It's costed the department money, and we have to recover that money. Is the department willing to recover that money? You can't go on like this, where politicians take decisions that they're not allowed to take, and it costs us money and it affects the people on the ground. I'd like to hear a response there. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks. And but you'll remember that the minister promised us that when the court case is finished, he'll come back and speak to us. Yes, and then now there will never be a break. There will never be a break. It's an executive authority. whether the minister has gone to somewhere else, another minister comes in, has to take the responsibility of what has happened. If there is anything to be paid, is this new minister that will pay. That will pay whatever cost if the court has actually allocated cost. You understand that? So I would say that we should await then. And then when you have that particular kind of briefing, then is then that now we would have reached some sort of finality. And then we know, then we can ask those kind of questions.
Oh, no, Chair, I'm seriously on a point of order. Just listen to me for one moment, please.
Yes.
This thing about some other time, we must wait, and I'm sorry I use a strong word now, is nonsense. Because you deliberately try to delay these things, Chair, so that we don't get the information. I'm going to speak to you later on when we're dealing with the minutes and prove how you make these things wait. So I've asked the question. The DG must offer whether he wants to answer or not. You can't switch my wife off here. I'm going to go on.
Honorable Hussein. You should not do that, because the tone in which you are saying nonsense is insulting. It's insulting. You should not do that.
Yeah. With respect, you know what's more insulting? Is the fact that you show disregard for the work that
no,
we do here. That's more insulting.
But Honorable Hussein, I would never insult you. Not under any circumstance. I will never insult you. I will never use derogatory words to you. And I expect you as well to do so. But if that is what you think, then you have got a license to do with me. And then you are forcing me to defend myself as well. And it's not going to be nice if we do those kind of things. It will never be nice. Then we just need to avoid hurling insults in a public meeting. That's all what I'm just pleading. Whether you like what I say or you don't like what I say, I don't attract you to insult me. I attract you to debate with me, if you want to debate with me, or you debate with the rest of the members, you put your facts in front of the members. All what I'm saying to you is, we're speaking about a matter that somebody that is not here started a particular action, and the DG responded, and then there are consequences. Now I'm saying, we need to actually get the person that started the thing, and then that person, in the form of the new minister now that is coming, because he's expected to take over all executive decisions that have been taken by the ministry. Doesn't matter that she was not there before. And only on those kind of explanations that we can throw now the questions. It is not in order to throw it to the DG to answer on the things that comes from an action of somebody else. It's not in order. But now, when I try to provide the way out of it, to say, let's deal it with this way, you have insults. It's not right. If you have a counter-argument, put the counter-argument without adding insult. You can always communicate any message, but in a good manner. Doesn't mean that no, your message will make more sense when it is vulgar, and then it is arrogant, and then it is loaded with a lot of insults. No. We'll wait for you to finish with your insults, but still engage your debate. Therefore, that's all what I'm just simply requesting, is that you need to ask questions to appropriate persons that have got the capacity and the responsibility to provide answers on the questions that you're asking. You don't just simply throw a question to somebody else who is not responsible for that particular action, and then you expect that that person must just simply answer, just because it's just in front of you, and then you have a right to throw a question. It's not correct. We are lawmakers, and we have to be reasonable and rational, even ourselves, in what we are doing. You see? It's not that we can't ask questions. We can ask questions, but the appropriateness of questions and the relevancy of questions and the correct persons that must be asked then also comes in. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, can I
thank
please
you very
address
much.
You?
The opportunity now is for...
I'm not done. You gave me an opportunity, you're raising an issue. You see, you said you want to debate, so let's do it.
No, I'm not afraid of you. No, it's not our problem.
I'm not afraid of you, so please, I will appreciate, you mustn't use these threats.
Listen,
I'm not afraid of you.
Listen,
my difficulty with you, I listen to you, you must listen to me now.
No, listen.
Is when we ask the questions here, you prevent them from answering it.
I'm not preventing anything.
Now that is insulting.
You completed asking questions. Now it is the opportunity for Rafuji to ask questions. And I will move to Rafuji. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you very much. The debate, but I understand that Mr. Hussein gave the DG opportunity. He said that whether can he answer or not, so we can leave it to the DG. However, DG, welcome back. An injury to one, an injury to all. We are so happy that you are back, our DG. You know, looking at the slides that you have given us, you know, I say, cry the beloved country. You know, Home Affairs and the Department of Health, that is the department where people who really wants to get rich quick, they run to that department. And it's really painful because it's our tax money. How can a person really ask for such exorbitant monies? It shows that they don't care. Only what they want is just to get rich quick scheme. I think it's totally unfair. You know, on slide 9, Dominus Litis. Dominus Litis. I'm just asking myself, then if this cases are still sitting there, can't the legal people of department write letters to these people? What are they intending to do with this Dominus Litis? I'm just asking that. And the contingent liability, we really welcome it. And I think also, DG, it will be more advisable that if you can also put it in a percentage so that we can be able to see what does it entails, that contingent liability. The state attorneys, I'm really skeptical with the state attorneys, because they don't have the insight of some cases vis-a-vis the department ones, that they are more knowledgeable and having the insight of the cases. And somehow, I think that is why we lose, because of the state attorneys. I think we should look at it and try to close some gaps in that regard. The slide 15, you know, where cases which are being incurred by employees, something must be done really about this, the employees of the department who are doing this kind of fraudulent processes in the department. They must be blackmailed, because I think when they come seeking for job, they are being told that they do and they don't. And they still proceed doing this kind of fraudulent tendencies. We welcome what the department is doing, challenging some of these court cases, you know, especially on the rulings that they were taken, because it will be like, you know, you really allow what when these people are really challenging this court cases. But we welcome that. We really welcome that, because people are taking chances. We've got really fraud stuff around the world here, because especially, you know, yes, I understand some of our parties here in Parliament, they want that we should have borderless. We should be borderless. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still very immature. It's like a spoiled child who wants everything, not understanding the consequences. But if we can have the PMA, really, we have to speed up this border management. And I think any intelligent person, a person who understands, you know, the consequences of not having your own nationality, you are lost, especially Africa, where we believe in culture, where we believe in our roots and that, and having a borderless. So you're going to be a senseless person who then have identity of your culture, of your values. So I'm not really trying to, you know, to bring other things here, but just to check our Africanism, our identity, our culture, our values, because we believe in the same. You must know where you come from, your roots. Then coming in South Africa with a borderless, just coming, how will you know where you come from? I'm just throwing it through the window. However, we should close, we must close those leaking taps. There are a lot of leaking taps, and you can see it is in the legal departments. We don't have muscles. And I'm of the view that even the person who is heading the legal sector must not be in a chief director. It must be in a deputy director. And we must employ more people who specialize, who are going to be specialists in certain issues in home affairs. This is our South Africa. This is our Africa. We really love it, and we don't want anything people to come and make it a playing ground. So thank you very much, because we have learned so much about these litigations, but let's close the tabs. I'm sorry, Chair, let's recommend a legal sector of this home affairs must be in the deputy director, a DDG, DDG level, and we need more people who are going to be specialists in this, according to the sectors. However, Baya Danki, we welcome you, DG. Injury to one is injury to all.
Honorable Mkhalipi.
I'm not sure about this injury to one and injury to all. From Amuraputi.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think I was a little bit covered by Honorable Hussein when he raised some of the questions to the DD, to the DG. Oh, I'm saying DDG because I used to the DDG as an acting. Welcome back, DG. Chair, this issue of state attorney, I think it must be very clarified, because now in our department we do have legal people, right? And the presentation from the DG is also clarifying the fact that when it comes to cases, it's only the state attorney. And also in the presentation on the taxing chapter, the department is also having some challenges when the state attorney has to take some decision without consulting the department. And now the question is, DG, if you can not use the state attorney as a department because you also have faced some challenges with, so what stop you not to use our legal services? Because in my opinion, they become very unnecessary if they can't help us in a department. That is number one. Number two, the question that was asked by Honorable Hussein, I think I'm covered because I wanted also to ask a specific question as well regarding your court case recently. Kotage, regarding the copy, when the chair was saying that maybe it must be also provided to members that needed those copies, I think I'm covered by Honorable Hussein to say that no, in fact, you are members of Parliament, Chair. This information is already public information because when you go to page 15, you just mention categories, core businesses, immigration and civic affairs, without getting into details, right? And we also have a category that talks about finance, supply chain management, disputed tenders and contracts. So that's where I think on category one, because in your presentation, you also come with some suggestion with how the department is going to intervene in such of those cases, which is very correct and is welcomed because the department, yes, it's supposed to come with intervention strategies on such matters. But when it comes to finance and supply chain management, disputed tenders and contracts, I think we must be privy to the information as members of parliament because we must also understand why we have to pay so much money and what went wrong in terms of disputes in the tender and tender processes and awarding of contracts. And we have, here in South Africa, we have such a country that is experiencing many corruptions when it comes to tenders. And if department also have such many cases, so now members of parliament, they just get interested to know what here in the department, what must have been went wrong. So with that a motivation, Chair, I think we have to get the copy of the presentation in details. Because when I remember very well, it's not even mentioned here, DG, but I think we were using it in your court case, to fight your court case. You even mentioned that the son of the former minister, that is the bone of contention, that's why the minister wanted you to be fired, because she wanted you to intervene in his son matter, so which I believe that it has something to do with tender processes within the department. But you didn't talk about it. I know that maybe you are not comfortable to divulge such information. You were using that in court. It's fine, but at some point, if it involves the department, we would like to know exactly what is happening in all totality. The issue of Marriage Act, stroke Civil Union Act, I didn't hear the DG to say that. How are we going to come with a solution to that effect? Because we've identified the problem, which is well and correct, and then now how are we going to align these challenges between the Marriage Act and Civil Union Act? DG, coming to the issue of fire blade, which you also mentioned on your presentation. And now the question that arises is, how is the department taking, how long are you going to take your time to study the judgment? We have written as the EFF chair, we have written a letter to the minister, the new minister. I don't know how long she will last as well. But yeah, she's the new minister. We have taken a decision to write to her to say, in our view as the EFF, we have written in details to say that we would like to tell the minister to appeal this decision, and we have mentioned our reasons. And so the department is saying on the presentation they are still studying the judgment. And there were some rumors, because I can't even quote the source, before the Oppenheimers take the department to court. There was rumors to say that the former minister didn't want the Oppenheimers because he was favoring the Gupta. So I just want to hear the DG on that one, because it came as if it's Gupta's, it's Gupta's versus Oppenheimer regarding that that thing of firebrand. And I don't know in your litigation, Director General, if also it includes the foreign mission staff, because we also have a staff in foreign missions. I don't know if it's included, and maybe you can also allude to that fact. On the new Dawn Technology case that is still outstanding from 2010, this is an old case, DG. So does it mean that the electronic document management system is also affected because of this case, or is it something that is separate? And no, thanks very much for, because as the chair was saying from the beginning, we were supposed to have this presentation last week, and then finally it has come before the committee. And I think we as committee members, or as members of parliament rather, we must get into detail so we can have a clear picture of what is happening. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG, for the presentation. I think, though, I think also, I have, my question has been asked by the Honourable Khalipi on the issue of page 1617 that talks to fireblade. But maybe to add something that also I hope is a question that says, as much as you have got no time frame to decide on this judgment, because this judgment really it has got grey areas where you see the dates that talks to January 2016 and October 2016. And now if you notice that the minister is denying the January 2016, talking about the October. So that also shows a grey area to us, which really now we're going to 2018. That's why also I had a problem when we don't have any time frame. And the second one, on the same issue, when you look at page 17, also concerned about the outcome. We don't even know when was the outcome of the court ruling. There's no date specified. We don't know whether it was the same October or this year, whatever. But when was the outcome of the court ruling? That is my question on that page also. On page 19, on the issue of Botswana citizens who committed serious crimes and then who crossed the borders to South Africa illegally. According to your experience, as yes, I understand that you're talking about the amendment of the, but my problem is if of the legislation, as of course we can amend the legislation. In your experience, what do you think can be done to prevent this recurrence? Because we can't have people who are just roaming around being a known criminals. That will make this country unstable. As you say that they are roaming around the streets, but they have got those serious crimes which they committed in their own country. Now also I have a problem maybe to ask another question that says, I think there's a slide that talks about, I think it's on page 21, that talks about the terms of treaty entered into by South Africa and Botswana. Now, Botswana is refusing to honor those terms of treaty. That's making South Africa now to be duty bound not to hand over name called Samoa to Botswana. So really that makes us to have problems if we say that we don't have any clue what can we do, therefore, for the time being, noting that we've got these 2 years, what is going to happen? Yes, I understand that he goes to report each and every time the inspectorate, but the fact of the matter, I don't know whether he's also illegal, he's also here illegally. But to my understanding, maybe you can just make a clue if what can be done, really. Because we can't wait for 2 years now, having criminals who are moving around our country. We've got our own problems in this country about our own criminals. Yes, of course. Our local criminals, because when I'm saying our own, I'm talking about our locals. Now, in addition to others who come from another country, and then they roam up around the country and not being taken care of by their own country. That is really pathetic. We've got our own problems. On page 23, the upgrading positions of employees, 31 employees, from level 6 to 8. Hey. I wasn't wake up before, but now I'm looking at this 14 million rand starting from 2009. My question is this, is there no need to use the PMDS to avoid further litigation? Because to my understanding, because as a worker, there was a system that is called PMDS, which people were upgrading, upward mobility was done according to your performance. Because if you leave it like that, there'll come another from 2009 again. They say that also we are also there. We want also to be upgraded. And then what will happen? We are going to have another 40 million going up again. So I think PMDS, what is happening now, because to my understanding, where I was working with Department of Health, there was a PMDS where you can get an opportunity due to your performance. On the issue of directories, I understand that when you look at this directory, when you look at the litigation, really, I understand the organogram. It doesn't talk to the work they do. Maybe what you can say that is the staff establishment, can you have really maybe a deputy director that to assist the director? Because the one that had to look at all those things which are there, and also all the labor relations, and all the collective bargaining grievances, disputes, and different matters to be done by one person, to be looked at by one director. So, to my understanding, I don't know, I think that's a lot of work, which that I don't think it does mean one person to be at the head, nobody who's assisting. Maybe if you really, I don't know whether the staff establishment is supposed to be like this, you can't do anything else to increase. And lastly, can't you compare the cost of hiring more legal staff per branch versus more officials to ensure quick processing of litigations? Because they are dragging. If they can be hiring of more legal experts per branch, so that they can move this process quicker. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Fika.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Welcome back, DG. Unfortunately, I thought your twin will be here, the acting DG. I don't know if you guys are fighting, but we'd like to see that. Firstly, those are the words to say, thank you for coming back. And we'll let them all be on board, because some of the guys that don't have time, they keep on saying this, you must fight for your own rights. So I'm very disappointed, because we were promised by the minister that she will come and explain what has happened and what has transpired. Now we don't want to talk about yesterday. The other thing, Chair, before I go on, because I don't have much questions, all the questions have been asked. I just want to say something to you about questions that are direct to the officials. Please, Chairperson, don't answer for the officials. We want answers from them, even if you know what is the answer. So please, let's move away from that. Now, DG, in the last slide, I think Mr. Kenya has mentioned this. I just want to find out, did you do any research? How is the structure going to stay? Are you going to have one state attorney in each office? Or when you talk about the branch, are going to be in saying have people who've got skills who can do the job before we are taken to court. The other issue is the issue of the old cases that are there for 2 to 5 years. Is there no way that the state attorneys can work on that and strike it off from the court? That's another thing, because this is really bad, Chair. Lastly, Chairperson, we are mentioning a lot of things. We request things in as members of this court. There was a mention of the documents that you were supposed to circulate. Oh, you don't want to circulate them because you are scared the information. Now, if you look at Home Affairs is one of the security clusters. We know there are things that you can't talk about in the domain, but once the thing is in court, definitely the information leaks. Everybody knows it. Now, I think you must put a trust on this committee. Give us the documents, because this presentation is coming from what you have. Now, the end of the day, it's like doing oversight. When you do oversight, you've got a knowledge of what is happening than reading on a piece of paper, which will tell you something different from what you see on the ground. So, with those words, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for recognizing me that I'm supposed to help me do. You know what is it doing? Go ahead. Thank you.
No, I don't know. I don't have a dictionary for that language. And probably I'll await when I've been trained properly to be able to interpret that. Honorable members, you throwing stones at me. You throwing stones at me to an extent that you want to relegate me to a robot here in front of you. It's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. I'm the chair of the committee, I've got responsibility. You have got powers as honorable members. But the people that we invite to come here, they are officials. They have got no powers to defend themselves when they are actually treated unfairly. I have a duty to do that. I have a duty to do that. While I'm expecting them to respond to your questions and give you all the information that you want. I have not said that they must not give you the information. I've said, if the document that they are having is having sensitive information that they are not willing to put it in public, they must do so and remove and adjust the document, and then they can give to honorable members. If you require it, you can also indicate that you require it, then they actually give it to you as such. Everybody among ourselves, you know that when it comes to source documents, when you write a letter, you will write a letter based on certain source documents. But those source documents that you have, they are not necessarily for public consumption. But you produce a document for public consumption because you actually sieve out what doesn't need to be out there in the public because of certain reasons, because of certain laws, because of certain protocols that governs your work. Therefore, we make these laws. We must also expect the officials to implement those laws and observe them and respect them. Therefore, if you want the files of the department that they use to actually produce this report that's in front of us, surely something is wrong. That's why we expect them to prepare a report and send it to us, that we can interact in terms of our responsibilities. You can't then just say, you know, give us the document that you used to produce that particular report. Yes, we can request that information, and then, but we must give them an opportunity to actually make sure that the information that is there doesn't put them in hot water as well. That's all what I'm saying. But like as I'm saying is that I can't just be a robot in front of you. I've got duties to do. DG, we can respond.
Well, thanks, Chair, and the honorable members. Chair, the first question is to be provided. That was my understanding that one not saying we can't do it, but want to do it in a manner that it must protect the judgment. You remember, a case might be in the court, but if it's not yet closed, that's the issue which we need to take. That's why we're giving it that summary. So, Chair, if we get that request, as you said, we'll be able to do it. But it's just on the to make sure that we don't compromise that. I agree with the Honourable saying that there's a lot which we want to do. I will deal with the issue of human error to say what do we do in the department. Check that's so high the number of people now will, if you can go through those lists, one people will be saying, no, it's because the department said I must pay. Like now this gentleman we're talking about on a case, that person is dismissed. It's not that it's in the disciplinary process, is dismissed, but it's taking us to court and say that dismissal is unfair. It can't be unfair because I have to report on a 30-day basis what that thing happened. So we do look at that. Maybe another issue we didn't put properly in the report. Around this issue of staffing, we've created a committee because we're realizing that we wanted to make sure that we don't get two cases and after that we lose that. Then we said, let's form a committee which is made up of legal, finance, counter corruption, and so that before we charge a person, we must make sure that that evidence is tight, which now links with what you are saying, that now we need to give the list which we do, because you know what is funny, even in the media space, if as a department we win a case, we will never get it, never. But once you lose it, it's a case which is published. So as I was giving here now that we have won this, we have done that, but we never get that. So we are keeping a roll book of our cases. So we know how many they are, which one we win, which one we lose, and then from there you learn out of it and say we must do certain things differently than what we have done before. Yes, it is correct. We do get a letter of demand. But a letter of demand does not only mean that once I receive it, I must say I'm happy. Immediately I say, no, I've received your letter, but I don't agree. Then they litigate and then it starts. So there are those processes which we make sure that we do not get into that. That's why we're really pushing, I think, in the last report I was not here, but where we are showing now at what level are we able to approve our permits. So I don't get into that. So those are the things which we want to really deal with our then that drop between 2015 and 2017 is what I did. But remember I said, if you take that 900 and
So Honorable Hussein may repeat the question, because Honorable Hussein was looking at 2013-2014, you had 593, and when you look it back, more or less it was just around the 400, 500.
Okay.
Then on 2014-15, then it went down to 209. And together with 2015-16 to 228. Then he says, what happened? What have you done there that the numbers went down to those, the levels of 200 and something? If I understood him correctly.
No, the information which I have is the one between Then Honourable Mkhalebi, is that the state attorney, that is a legal thing that we cannot do. So state attorney that would have right, any other person would have to go to court. So in the legal system of South Africa, that even an advocate, you can't just go straight to an advocate. You must first go to an attorney, and the attorney must brief the advocate and all that. That is the thing which we have. However, why your case is as strong as the information you give to the lawyer? That's why Chair was raising that issue of speciality in competent practice. Even though we can be capacitated to get all those capacities in terms of different skills, that even now the one which is still falling, even to get a better level of advocacy, those different things are new to us. So those skills is something which is still needed. So it's something which I think we need to do. And then this matter of the civil, of marriage and civil, remember that case is not yet closed. This is what we're talking about. What we are just saying is that at that level, that we must follow this process. We still engage with it to understand. So it's not yet closed. So it's still proceeding. So a solution might come out through that process. The judgment of fire blades. It's another maybe I should have said at first that once a judgment is out, as the other party within 14 days, but court days, that is week days, to file, to appeal. You can submit a notice of appeal if you want, but within that 14 days, if you don't file the other party, it means now that business stands. So we've got 14 days, I don't know what that judgment is. If it is 27 of October, it means now it will finish on the 18th of November. So it means now by the 18th of November is our last day. If we didn't do anything, after that, it means that the decision of the courts then. So those are the dates which we have in our plans. Yes, the foreign missions have everything to do with all of that. So we deal with all of that. The DMS, that case, no, is not holding us at all. Remember now that when you apply now for your smart card or your passport, that information is kept. It was an old thing of 2000. I think it is 2010 there, but that then I was about 2007. But then it was, so it's an old concept when the department was looking at the use of the new system which we have, when they would have the document management system, but now we know what that is. Then, the issue of... As Chess said, that we don't want to get into these cases, because we don't want to get into them now, something which we are getting into things. That's what we have to put once the case is finalized. And we remember, once it is on the papers, it's then that it is public, but now we're still appealing and all that things. I mean, what is done with that? Then, on the time frame, I think I've dealt with it. That issue of Botswana. This, as I can simply remember, is the constitution of this country. And that principle of non-refoulement is a universal concept which we sign. When we go and sign those UN conventions, we are signing those things and say, I am part of doing this, therefore we can't. The only way which we are trying even with them was to say why this person maybe, if he's guilty of that, can't serve the sentence yet. The minister must be tried in South Africa. And once he's tried in South Africa, serves the sentence. So that by the time now he has to go to Botswana, he already served the tribunal, can't double. But Botswana, if you remember a case which we had with Botswana, okay, South Africa, who was in Botswana. And he said, no, can't we bring this person back? Spain, but sovereign state. So we have to. So that one is the thing. That's why we have the Constitutional Court. That we come to hear us. What did you do? No, this PEMDAS is still there. PEMDAS is still utilized, but now what was changed by government is no longer that now we sit in a position and then if we go 5 years, we get promoted to this level after 5 years. No. In the old public service, we were able now just to go and look in a department, oh, this one is a DG, this one is a GC, but those are scrubbed like an age that now we have here and grow. The role of MDS is to compensate you as well as achieving the objectives of that particular year. But there was nothing left to do with the purpose of the DG. Then the issue of anything which you want is the cost of employment. That's what is a problem for Puma. As I was saying, that the committee I know was in the process of assisting us on that with the National Treasurer, but we do understand the difficulties which are there. We are trying to defend the little which we have so that if we can defend that, so departments need to be very, very creative. Like, this thing of shifting funds around, if now you do something better, like Home Affairs, we still believe that maybe in a 2 years' time, that's why we fight on this modernization. If now we implement our modernization proper, because this year we were looking at automating now death, marriage, and death. It means that even the office currently has got 10 staff members. But that system is implemented, I should have 8. And then the 2 we take and put them somewhere else. That's why, you know, I think it is important that what we're presenting, the system of legal, not the structure of legal. These are just the field post. Legal structure, I think, what was 50 or 60?
47.
Yeah. So according to the number of positions within the legal services, about 47. But what is funded? Because it is misleading to come and say, I've got 47. Then when you ask, why are you not filling these posts? And then you start and say, they are not funded. So the structures on that is fine, but the problem is the money. So what we need to do is those interventions which will help us. Yes, and so on, that's not here. But legal officers, we really want, we are starting at the only two functions, immigration and civils. Once we move out, we go to the provinces and so on. So I think that the issue of document is already talked about. Is there anything which I left out, which you want to add to the
No, Chair, thank you very much. There's just this matter that Honorable Hussein raised on the delay in the adjudication of like permanent resident permits. You know, one of the issues I want to highlight, you know, we came to this committee raising the issue of, Tish talked about the inspectorate and the fact that we have fewer inspectors in the country, about 750 at the time. Now, when you adjudicate, let me go back, about 80% of permanent resident applications are based on the marriages. Now, the process, therefore, that you have to follow is a bit tighter compared to somebody who comes as an investor or whatever. And then you have to ensure, for example, that these people are married. So the responsibility of the inspectorate is to do family visits so that the adjudicators can base their decision on the report that is provided by the inspectorate. So this is where the delay in most instances come. That is why we have a turnaround time of about 8 months for those cases. Obviously, because we have to have a service delivery charter that says, you know, this is the anticipated period. But this is where the bottleneck has been, and we are actually reviewing that time period because it is clear that it will become unrealistic because the numbers are increasing and that we are unable to respond to that with adequate resources based again on what we brought to this committee. So I think it's something that needs to be brought to the committee because it's difficult to adjudicate if we do not have a report that you can base your adjudication on.
because in most instances, those marriages are actually marriages of convenience. So I thought I should clarify that particular issue specifically. So we are reviewing the time, the turnaround time. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Sorry to interrupt, Chairperson. I didn't hear you talking about the outcome of the court ruling the time. Because now I hear you talking about that you are left with so many days now to look after that. Because to my understanding, I read that you are only seeing this October 2016. And now you're talking about the 14 days now.
It is of force and defense. It means we're supposed to open according to the court. But we are looking at that. But now, as well as saying, but the law allows you, if you are not happy with the decision of the court, you can go and appeal. But in the 14 days, we are not operating there now. This is what we are considering. There's no, that has not been opened.
Is asking is that in the document the minister made a decision on the in January 2016, and we were saying no, minister made a decision in October 2016, so that was the contention. But what this is explaining now is the date of the judgment insofar as that fire blade case. But basically, the issue that you are raising is it is those two dates that the court relied on the decision that is alleged to be the January decision, while the department says we didn't make that January that decision. You know, it was made only in October when the minister rejected that particular application. So that's the matter that needs to be argued, obviously, in court based on the evidence that will be provided.
Thank you, honorable members. I think we just need to unpack that as we move out of the meeting. I'm sure the DG has indicated the consequence of that decision, that anybody, any private person can walk to our ports of entry and ask to establish a private port of entry just along the existing public one. And you will not know where to stop this thing. It can be somebody in George now can just go and open a private whatever. You know, like as he has indicated in Bay Bridge, that somebody who can say no because I travel to Zimbabwe and back, I can't go where the public goes because there's long queues, and then they establish a private port of entry for them. But, you know, that is at the macro level. At the micro level, it means that when that is approved, then the DG must provide immigration officers there. The police must deploy policemen and women there. Treasury or SARS then must deploy customs officials there to go and serve private persons, but using public money. That is now the consequence that we are having. Now the question is, given lack of resources that the finance minister has indicated during the MTPPS, do we really have resources to go and serve private persons? That is the question that the government then must apply its mind on it and take correct decisions. And all what we want from the state is to use public money efficiently. And so they will indicate what they want to do. Of course, we just hope that they will be advised correctly by those that knows better in the legal fraternity. Honorable Hussein?
Chair, can I just ask, what is the resolution around the list of the cases that we raised earlier? Are we going to get a copy of it all?
Yeah, I think the DG has responded as such, and then they said, no, it's, you'll make it available in a manner that also doesn't compromise the department. Okay. suffer that nowadays, you know. Mm-hmm. Even in the many circles where we did not expect it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a, and it's nice. It's a good development. Honourable members, I think that we need then to thank the DG, I think, for having led the team and also taken us through this. And we are now a little bit aware about the depth of the pool in which the department is swimming. And then, like as I've indicated initially, that there's very little on certain areas that the department can do, because I know that Honorable Hussein has actually said no, doesn't agree with me. But I think as we move forward, you will find reason to agree with me on the particular matter, because all of us here in this committee, we agree that the capping on compensation of employees leads to shortage of staff. Shortage of staff, then a direct consequence is incapacity of the department to do certain things. And also we are very clear that the state law, the state attorney, yes, then if they've got shortage or capacity problems, that means they're not going to pay serious and adequate attention to any case that comes in front of them. Then the possibility is losing these cases. If on the front line staff is short, then you don't have people that do quality control, because people now are just simply doing with the ordinary day to actually produce bricks to go. But what is the quality of the bricks? There is nobody that says, no, you have not compacted this brick properly. There is nobody that takes the brick to go and test it. But they just produce. And even when people's names have been typed wrongly on the machine, there's nobody that does the quality control, because one person is doing almost work for more than two, three people. Whereas when you have got the division of labor, at least others check the other work of the other ones, and then you've got some sort of quality control and all that. So as long as we remain with this problem where certain offices are empty, no people, certain desks at the ports of entry, there is nobody, and then you are likely to have these funny challenges that we're going to lose cases, we're going to lose that, and then we're going to have a certain application taking longer, and all sorts of things. So we definitely need to make sense to Treasury that this is the kind of a department where you cannot make a mistake, which means it must be properly resourced. Otherwise, then there is something else. This department and the police, especially the section of police that does investigations and putting dockets together, if it is not properly capacitated, all the cases will be lost in the courts. And so until those that are holding the necessary powers to decide on the allocation of funds, of course we hope that the budget office will assist us moving forward one day, that we can actually re-juggle around the numbers and take the monies where they're supposed to go and remove it from where the monies just disappear, not doing anything for the people. Then probably they will achieve certain things. But, yeah? Come again? I don't know. I'm hearing you. So I think these are the things that when you look at them collectively, then they lead us to a situation where you cannot expect an efficient performance, which is something that is costing us, and the court cases that is forcing the department to take decisions on matters that they have not researched and investigated. And we just simply want to say thanks, and then look at that particular list and then send it to AD, and then AD should be able to distribute it among the honorable members. Honorable members, should we look at the sets of minutes that are in front of us? I just hope that we have looked at them, and then we should be able to go through them. Thank you very much, DG. You are released if you think you can run away.
No, it's
fine. You think? Yes. But I just want to investigate your relationship, DG, with Honorable Mkhalipi. It needs a public protector. All right. Or just to announce, I think, Honorable Members, is that we will also circulate some sort of a proposed program or agenda of the seminar next week. And then so that we know what it is that is under plans. I thought we spoke about it many times on the Vision 2063 in relation to migration. Yes. Next week, or I think it's on Tuesday. Yes. Yeah. Parliament. Yeah. I think we try to explain the issue of Germany, that Germany, remember that they are still struggling to find cabinet. After elections, they are still battling. Well, you know, in the unlikely event, that's why I was asking Honorable Hussein that he must just simply demean to insult me, because in the unlikely event that he becomes a chairperson of this committee after 2019, he wouldn't like that to happen to him when he's sitting here. Therefore, he must start training himself for that unlikely event that he may be a chair. You see, so it's... We shouldn't deal with the minutes first. Yes, and then... I'm saying that I know the word nonsense is not an insult on its own. But the manner in which it is said is the one that actually puts a context to it. That this person then is now actually, if he can have an opportunity, he may even try to box me. It's only that he's far, or probably doesn't have capacity to box me. So that's why now he resorts just to an insult.
No. Chair, allow me.
But I was serious with that.
Let me just say firstly, my intention is never to insult you. I am, as an individual, I am seldom disrespectful. So the intention was not to disrespect you or to say that you are nonsense. I said my intention was to say, this thing is nonsense. And what I'm referring to is what I want to put on the table to you now. You see, the thing is, Chair, I think we have a fundamental disagreement about what I think your role as the Chair is in this committee, and therein lies the problem. Because as a Member of Parliament here, I see myself as the person who has a responsibility to conduct oversight over the department. And to do that, we are going to ask those difficult and uncomfortable questions. In fact, on every occasion when I ask the uncomfortable question, the officials are not uncomfortable, you become uncomfortable. To the point that you want to defend them from answering the question, and I don't understand this. To me, it doesn't make sense, because you too, sir, are a member of parliament like us. You are not the lawyer for the officials. So maybe you and I, we disagree on what our jobs are, what your job is. Maybe I don't understand what you're doing. Because when I look at the rules, nowhere in the rules does it say it is your job to defend the department. It doesn't say anywhere. And if you can put that on the table and show me where it says it, then I'll respect it. So when we put very direct questions, when I do, very direct questions, you get uncomfortable and you say, no, my job is to defend the department. Well, you see, this was a good example just now, because the question I asked is, what is that going to cost the department? It's the subject matter on the agenda. We are talking about legal issues. There was absolutely nothing wrong for the DG to say, I don't have the figure, but it's going to be in the region. Our estimate is X, or this is what it's going to cost the department. That is impacts on our work. But because of your intervention, now he doesn't have to answer it. Then you see his response where he says, no, don't get uncomfortable, just wait now. I can see you already want to deal with me. So just wait. Let me deal with you first. Wait. Yes, yes, just calm down, calm down. Don't get hot. Just wait. You said we must debate, and I'm dealing with it respectfully, so you must just understand. And because of that involvement of yours, the DG then says, I'm happy to leave it. Those were his exact words. So you provide the cover for the departmental officials to feel safe not to answer those uncomfortable questions. You are doing that, Chairperson. And I'm saying this to you with great respect. I'm not insulting you to say you don't know your job, but maybe we don't understand what your job is. Maybe you don't understand it. But somewhere something is wrong. Because if we ask a question here, we must get the answers. And I'll show you when we're going through these minutes. There's a pattern of conduct here. This is not an isolated incident. It happens on every occasion. We ask that information, you step in and you prevent it. The same thing has happened on the Gupta matter, the naturalization matter. You deliberately try to push it to the next date and the next day and the next. You'll see how many decisions we took here that says we must invite Gigaba here and invite those over and over. To this day they never come. I'll show you more and more examples. And Chair, you are preventing me from doing my job. I'm saying this to you with the greatest of respect, and I'm addressing you personally. You are preventing me from being able to do my job. The same thing with the list of those cases. The DG says, I brought it here to give it to you, but Chair, you must guide us whether we can handle it. No, you have to do this and this. So the access to that information, and access to any information, is a problem because you are preventing us from getting that access to that information, including even Frolic had asked for us to conduct an investigation around the Gupta issue. You prevented that from happening. This committee had a heated debate about summoning the minister. You prevented that from happening. We took a decision to invite them. You prevented that from happening. And even when those decisions that we took that you don't like, you see to it that it does not get implemented. And I'm going to show you as we go through these minutes just now. Thank you very much.
Don't speak endless. You make your point and then you ask other people.
You're the one who speaks endless.
Yes. Yeah. You see, the issue is that you probably confuse what I say with what you think I'm saying. I don't defend the department. I protect the delegation that has arrived here together with yourselves. I'm not going to allow the delegation here to hurl insults responding to your questions to yourself. I'm not going to do that.
You said the words defend.
Yes.
Well,
it is fine. It is fine. But all what I mean is that I have to protect everyone that is in this particular meeting. But now what I'm trying to say is that you should understand the power relations that we have here in this meeting with the people that we involve. You have the right to ask any question. You have the right to ask any question. They have to ask to answer the questions that are relevant to them. But because of the power relation, when you have asked the question, they are forced to answer, even if they're not supposed to answer. They are forced to answer because you have asked the question,
yes.
Even when it is not right, because they can't defend themselves, literally. That's why even in the House there, when you ask a question, whether it is one supplementary question, that is out of order, it's not in line, the presiding officer would always say, that is a new question. If you are comfortable, if you are comfortable answering minister or answering the president or deputy president, but he has a right to inform the person that you, this is a new question, you are not obliged to answer it. So he has given us, we asked the report, he has forwarded us the document that we wanted on litigation. But he's having other documents that he has used to actually produce this report. Now I'm saying, I'm wary with that document, because when he said he described that document, he said, no, I have a document here, a detailed document with names of people and blah, blah, blah. Then I must process that information. Is it a document that can be easily given out for public consumption? I don't know. Now, yes. No, but he has described and say you have got the, he has got a document, a detailed document with a list of cases and names. Now I'm saying you need to process that particular document in a manner that these members can get it, and if they indicate to yourself as they have a right that they need a document, you must make it available. That's what I said.
Only after I pushed.
No. Initially, yes. I said as is. That document as is, it should not, if it has got the private names in there on cases that are not even completed, you understand? Then he has to actually process it. But I mean, me and you should be knowing better that he cannot just flush detailed information on cases that are not finished and blah blah blah, and then with private names and all that. You see?
Actually, I don't need the doctor.
So.
No.
So it's I think that as long as you understand what I'm trying to say, is that the officials should not be put in a situation where they say wrong things by lawmakers. Yeah, it should be made by other people, but not lawmakers, forcing officials to flout the laws of this country. We shouldn't do that. We must always caution them to play within the rules and the laws. Honorable members, can we then look at the...
But you're not participating in the discussion.
Come again?
It also affects us.
Yes.
This came up with change.
But then you must understand that we may not go to the minutes.
Yeah.
Yes. Is that what you're saying?
Okay, no, but you see, this is the problem with you.
No. If that is what you're saying,
Chair,
that you
this is the problem. You don't want these members of this committee
speak.
To interact. You see, you're just intimidating. So, Chair,
yes.
Let me just first by saying that I'm happy that we have an opportunity to speak about this matter, especially your conduct, because there's no one here. Because at some point, we get very uncomfortable when we have to fight with you in front of people who are not the members of this committee, right? But I just want to speak from my mind to say that, Chair, at some point we are a problem. You intimidate members of this committee. As today, no, all of us, you are a stumbling block between the members and the department. You don't even waste time. Chair, the other thing that you must understand, Honorable Hussein was saying there's nothing in the rules that give you so much power to be a stumbling block. I want to say to you, this is not the committee, the only committee that we serve in. We do have experience with other chairpersons. And secondly, the point that I want to make, your name is always protruding on the chief's forum, complaining about your conduct, how you chair the meeting of Home Affairs. Maybe, you don't know, because at some point when you made a mistake, you don't just realize that I'm the problem here, right? So that's why we are saying, Chair, please change the way you treat us. At some point we've been saying to you, we are not invited by you to be here to be members. We are doing our work. So we are expecting just to pose questions, even if you are very uncomfortable with such questions. But when you just jump before them to speak, and then you just give them a leeway not to respond to questions from us. So at some point, Chair, you must just go and do a retrospection on yourself. Because we can't tolerate such conduct from the chairperson of the committee. You know, I'm a member of Home Affairs. I'm a member of International Relations. I served with two honorable members here. We are two different people, you and Honorable Masang. Two different people. So Honorable Hussein was speaking about the rules to say that you don't have any rule that suggests to give you so much power to fight with us. You treat us as children here in this committee. We are not your kids. We are members of parliament. We are here to do our work. So we are talking to you as a brother to say, please, just go and review your conduct on how you treat us as members of committee. I don't want to go to details because we've been interacting with Hussein on what happened and what, but if you go back and play a video of you chairing this committee, you'll see what I'm saying. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Is there anything new?
Okay. Chairperson, actually, I don't want to repeat what I've said before. Not all of us, we can see the same mistake and then we keep quiet. But I still feel that it's good for the members to speak, not in front of the visitors. Now, it's a good thing, maybe it will give you time to think and say, rectify my mistakes. Now, another example is that as a chairperson, getting involved to stop a state culture, it's not a good thing because it's out there. And I feel that I have to mention it, that people are talking about it. This man is a chairperson, and we are busy trying to get the state capture thing to investigate it. So please, chairperson, just try and change some of them out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. No, I think honorable members, is that it looks like we'll keep on fighting. We'll keep on fighting until I'm fired, until I resign, or until I do X, Y, Z. As long as ourselves as members, we become unreasonable, and then we do ask things that are not correct, and then to officials, and put the officials in a fix. There's nothing for us to gain out of that. But I mean, it's as long as you ask the relevant questions that, you know, the officials have to answer, whether it's the minister or whatever, they will always...
You don't hear from the members,
yes.
You don't have the power to decide whether the question is relevant. No, it is fine.
But you see the issue that you're sitting with today. You see, you're speaking about the matter that relates to the former minister with the DG. Then you want the DG to answer a question on that. You see, and then I'm saying, let's wait for the minister to come, because the minister must account on that, and then we can now ask all the follow-up questions. Then you say I'm defending or I'm doing what?
You know, as the chairperson, you're supposed to give a guidance.
Let
me speak before here, Chair.
Okay.
As a chair,
yes.
Your role is to give a guidance.
Yes.
When Honorable Hussein was asking that to the DG, we're supposed not to jump to answer that. Expect him to answer. And afterwards, we have to say that, no, but Honorable, remember, we are going to invite a new minister after him. So what you are doing, you just blocked him to say whatever he must say it. So that's how is your role supposed to be. Allow them and come after to say, but members, like you used to do, when I was joining this committee,
yeah.
Used to be polite to say that, okay, now members, let me remind you, because you as members will forget 1, 2, 3, afterwards.
Yeah.
But lately you completely change. You come before them.
No, thank you very much. You see, there is only one thing that you are not aware. We have engagement with Hussein, this particular man, last week, and then we have spoken about it. You see, He's just simply putting me in a fix, deliberately.
Well, exciting.
Because we engage about it, and therefore, you may not be knowing the history of that particular matter that Hussein is raising. You see, we have discussed about outside this particular matter. So that is this.
It's not a matter that Hussein. Honorable
Raphu.
This thing you are just saying that it's
give it to Raphu.
Okay. It's not for you saying
yes.
Us, for the benefit of
no,
Hussein.
It's fine. Give it to Raphu.
Chairperson, I think in the committee people have added their views, and then I just wanted to say that another man's meat is another man's poison. We view things differently. However, today, what Honorable Hussein said, he posed a question whereby he said even to the DG, DG, if you want to answer this, it's okay. If you don't want to answer, yes. However, Chairperson, you were the one who answered and then really stalled the meeting. I think really we are not perfect, and really let's just close this chapter and then and go and do a reflection on this matter. I thank you, Chair.
What's that? I'm not defending myself. But all what I'm saying is that as long as we are correct and reasonable and conduct ourselves in a correct manner, let us not put the things that you know that it is not right, but you just simply pursue it and try to actually put people in a fix, and then that will make us to have disagreement continually. Thank you very much. No, thanks. Thank you very much.
You are a very good chair, right? You have a grasp of things, right?
Yes.
But you just mess it up when you want to defend the department. That is all we are saying to you. Because when you were saying, no, remember, the new minister must come, right?
Yes.
It was correct, definitely correct. There was nothing wrong. But the timing of your response to members. Because I'm saying to you, as a chair, we have to guide the meeting. That is correct, guide. But why now you don't want to guide? You want to dictate to us what we must speak about. Okay, the second point before the meeting, before the minutes, that I want to raise with you, because I might have go now. On the Chief Youth Forum, subsequently to the Programming Committee, we spoke about you. Yes, I'm telling you because I'm a member. Because, yeah, we discussed about this committee. And then the chair of the chairs, the Frolic said, is on record, it's a parliamentary committee, that one. He said, the issue of home affairs on state capture, you are going to tell us when are we going to deal with it. He even said to us, before we start any meeting on home affairs, because the last meeting was cancelled, this one, before we even interact with the department, the chair is going to elaborate on the state capture processes. So I want to get that clarity.
That's why I'm saying to you, do I really need to get involved in what was discussed in the WIPS meeting or the programming meeting, which I don't participate? Because whatever comes there, then Frolic would communicate to me. Surely Frolic can't communicate to me.
No problem, Chair.
Can we allow Frolic to communicate to me what you are saying, and then I'll respond to him.
Okay.
And then
no problem.
Surely not Frolic to communicate through you to me. I don't think it is appropriate.
Chair, I'm saying it was discussed on the platform of a parliament.
That's why I'm asking. I don't need to hear that.
You see now. Can I finish? Let me finish,
no.
Chair. I'm saying a programming committee is a committee of parliament. The issue of your name, of being wanting to control us, it was raised in a programming committee, the speaker's meeting. He undertook to say that before you start your meeting, you'll pronounce on the processes of the state capture, right? Tomorrow is a chief whist forum. On this day is a procurement committee. Now, when we started the meeting, we didn't say anything about what Frolic have said. That's why I'm checking with you in order for me to go back to the procurement committee to say the chair. I even checked with the chair of the portfolio committee. He said he does not know anything. That is fine, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Frolic, if there are certain decisions somewhere, we'll communicate it to you.
But
you
have taken that
decision. Can
you close the case? Yes, I'm saying it doesn't matter whatever committee takes decisions. But what I'm saying is that if the decision needs to be communicated to me, the relevant person in that particular committee will communicate those decisions. Therefore, that is fine. I think honourable members.
Chair, on that matter, may I just ask you this question?
Just,
we have taken a decision already. If you're in a hurry, you can leave.
Honourable members.
We've taken a decision. It's on the minute.
We are now
around the state capture matter.
This is
can you just tell us when is this going to happen?
Honourable Hussein, you wanted to go to the minutes. Now it is already past 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
So then this minute then will then be considered in the next meeting. Then this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.